Hello and welcome to the Culture File Weekly, the XXL Friday remix of the programme with all our week's worth of sounds and stories from Ireland and beyond. This week we're in Galway, where Druid Theatre Company has been putting its toe in the water of live stream theatre for their latest production of The Cherry Orchard. We're into the woods in Carlow, where jazz pianist Carol Nelson has been foraging for inspiration, and we're wandering in the mind and along the bookshelf of comedian Maurice Gohan. But we begin this time with the work of Subset. First they came for Stormzy and I said nothing because, well, you know, ephemeral art, isn't it? Then they came for David Attenborough and, well, that's when stuff got serious. Murals from the artist collective Subset, including massive portraits of grime stars and eco-heroes, have been one of the most visible additions to Irish streets in recent years, both in commissioned work and what we will for the moment call uncommissioned. Dublin City Council recently took legal action over some of the collective's works, seeking orders for their removal under planning regulations. But this is just the latest in a constant to-ing and fro-ing between authorities and street artists in Ireland and beyond. This time on Culture File, Louis Scully talks to members of the artist collective Subset about the struggles of street art.
We're an artist collective using the mediums of large format artwork, design, photography, film, sculpture, installation, curation. We work with Dublin City Council. We have done on several projects, so Bushy Park, Herbert Park, both very successful projects from the perspective of, you know, both sides came away satisfied with what we had done and the public seemed to like it too. So that's how we envision it working all the time. And in both of those cases, we had brought the projects to the council and said, this is what we want to do, this is how we want to do it. They were satisfied and they let us do it. Now, we asked permission because it was their property, so we're not going to just rock up and paint someone's property without permission. But as far as the actual involvement of Dublin City Council, not the people we were dealing with, they were incredibly helpful. They're like really nice people to work with, delighted. Hopefully we'll continue to work together in the future. But, you know, it's not exactly facilitation. And then that's why I suppose we felt a little bit restricted with our city council. There's so much bureaucracy, red tape, hurdles, obstacles that are put in the path of people who are trying to do something different. We've put forward frameworks for license agreements. We've obviously painted without planning permission. We've, in some instances, painted with planning permission. In some instances, we've painted in collaboration with City Council. So, like, we feel we've tried a lot of the different available options at the moment. And still, even after all of that, you don't know what the answer is. But one thing we do know is, from looking at other countries, other cities, is that there's a better dialogue and there's more respect. You know, people are always telling us you should go to different cities, it would work really well for you there, you'd blow up and you'd be successful and so on. But we just want to ensure that the fruits of our labour are for Ireland first and foremost. That's a pretty important thing to all of us. The council, they posted a photo of the artwork and then the next day they sent us a letter asking us to take it down.
Well, we received a letter the next day, so yeah, we were probably both hot and depressed at the exact same time.
But different departments, you know, like, no, the person who was responsible for the social media account is obviously just trying to communicate the interest and stuff around the city, and that's fair, so, like, no issue or anything, but it just shows that. Well, to me, what it shows most is that just, again, the complications of the situation and people's hands just being tied.
I'm not sure to go with the hands being tied.
Yeah, but it's hands... No, well, I was about to say it's hands being tied, but no real motivation to untie them. There is actually very little they can do in the way of changing things. It has to go up the chain of command. But it seems, based on our experience, that that chain of command is unwilling due to the fact that they consider, and arguably in most cases it would be correct, they have more important things to deal with. And that actually kind of hits the nail on the head for us, because we're like, yeah, you're right, this isn't that important. Therefore, it doesn't need to be approached in such a rigid and dogmatic fashion. We use the Planning and Development Act to govern large format artwork, which is, to us, just not suitable for the medium that we're talking about. And because there's nothing else, it's sort of just grouped in under the one thing. How are you supposed to work in those conditions? What we're trying to do and how we're trying to go about it, it's a difficult game to play. We're at the point now where it's like, we don't even care necessarily if the minister does anything. We're just going to be doing what we're doing anyway. But we prefer not to have to deal with the backlash as a result of doing that, because we feel the backlash isn't warranted. Now, we're not asking for a license, like carte blanche, for us to do whatever we want, whenever we want to do it. Of course, you have to be respectful of everyone else in the city. And we feel that based on the quantity of time we've been doing this and our motivation behind it, that we're at least a decent judge of what should and shouldn't be done. And therefore, that's enough for us. That's our legislation, that's our governing, or governance on it, is ourselves. You know, obviously that's not agreeable to a lot of people, and people will hear that and say, who do they think they are? But that is who we are.
Louis Scully there, talking to members of the Artist Collective subset about the unfinished struggle of street art. Next, our latest file from Galway 2020, where this week in the city's Year of Culture, some large trucks have pulled up outside the Black Box Theatre and disembarked a platoon of cameras and their operators. On Thursday night, Galway's Druid Theatre Company joined the likes of New York's Met and London's National Theatre in streaming their latest show live to cinemas. And the night before that, I'm getting there, the film production team had its first rehearsals at Capturing Gary Hines' Fresh Harvest at the Cherry Orchard. It was at that point, told you I'd get there, Culturefile went to meet Dione Oram, producer of the filming, and right there by the door, Druid's Brian Fenton.
So we're at the Black Box Theatre in Galway. We are here with Druid, working with a company called Serpent from the UK, putting together this live broadcast of The Cherry Orchard, which is a version by great Galway writer Tom Murphy of the Anton Chekhov original. So we're just walking into the auditorium. Come this way.
The song's a bit sort of... Derva Crotty there doing a bit of a warm-up.
The actors just going through their lines before we open the house, and cameras are in place, and the tech team are doing final checks.
Hello, I'm Dione Oram from Serpent Productions, brought in to produce the filming of this wonderful play. So today has been our sort of main technical preparation day, with rigging the cameras, checking through all the radio mics, all the audio, EQing the audio, working on our, you know, exact layout and technical setup. We come in, and our aim is to really capture the show for the audience in the cinema, so that they feel almost like they're in the theatre. We really want to capture the director's show and live piece, not change it in any way.
So the cameras get a couple of the seats, as it were?
Oh yes, the cameras have about six seats each. And we have to, it's always very, very critical where the cameras sit in relation to the play, so that the director has the best, you know, shots he needs. So that always takes some finessing on the day, and moving things a little bit to make sure it's the right, absolutely the best position we can be in.
You know, I get up before 5 every morning. I'm handling money, my own and other people's. And I see what the human being about me is like. And you know, you only have to start doing something to realize how few honorable people there are. You know, sometimes when I can't sleep, I think, sweet Jesus, you gave us all this. Forests, fields, vast horizons. We ought to be giants.
So the Black Box, with its rate seats, now has 6 cameras. 3 very crucial close-up cameras sitting in absolute centre of the house, so they're the best seat in the house, essentially. And then We have two cameras on the side that are capturing entrances, exits, and connection of different parts of the show. And then you have the wide shot giving the full proscenium. So we have six cameras. We have a lighting team in who work with the show lighting team, and they are making sure all the lights and the balance of the cameras works for cinema. And then we have a big audio team here who've been rigging radio mics today and making sure you can't see them and making sure that the sound levels are right. And then we have microphones also dotted around the theatre, just capturing very clean vocal dialogue to go into the mix.
Come 8 o'clock, where will you be?
I will be, we have an OB truck parked outside. OB stands for outside broadcast. I will be in the truck with the director and his, what we call gallery team, who work with him. Ross McGibbon, who very, very experienced live filming director for theatre shows and opera and ballet, he has spent the last, since the show opened in fact, scripting every camera. So he has worked with his, initially on his own, and then with his key team and the camera operators, they all have script numbers. It's all scripted. Mostly I am just watching it, and by this stage I'm watching it and happy it's all going well. This show, the complexities and the challenges have been the width of the staging, width of the stage, and our proximity camera-wise, but it's also because there's a lot going on an awful lot of the time with this show, different upstage action, characters that you really want to capture on film. So it's how you capture it without either being too quick in your cut, but also allowing the action to unfold. So it's really getting the right angles, but it is quite a complex place. There's a lot of movement and a lot, and a very wide stage with different things going on. So we've been working with Druid on this actually for nearly a year since I think we started talking about it. And then tonight is our first run through where we finesse, we watch it, we see if any little things need changing, we're checking on any tweaks on the show lighting that needs to be done for filming to make it work, and also the balance of the audio, and we have to just work through that. So tonight's our first rehearsal. We make some tweaks before the transmission tomorrow night.
I do have a feeling something is happening. As though the roof were to come in on top of us.
We've been working on this for many months now at Druid. It's I suppose what we were saying is that the first Irish theatre company to do it on this scale, I suppose, in the sense that live on the night we're playing really across Ireland, you know, up to 30 cinemas nationally, and in a lot of places that Druid regularly tour to. So we've a big audience around the country, and again, it's all about access and I suppose getting a very cheap front seat for some people, which is great. So we're playing up as far as Letterkenny and down to Dungarvan and Cork and Limerick and all around the country, and then a couple of UK cinemas live as well, which is very exciting. So again, just getting, I suppose, that Druid presence as much as we can out there as part of the Galway 2020 year as well, which is all about, I suppose, looking out to Europe and indeed looking out to the world, and just getting a great piece of Irish writing out as much as we can, yeah.
And beyond these islands, the performance will have a live, but not tonight, as it were.
Exactly, yeah. So we use the live recording to, over a series of the next 12 months, really, to do what we're calling encore performances. Across the world, really, we've got Mumbai, Abu Dhabi, Sao Paulo, and a lot of US territories kind of locked in, and we're releasing them as we go as well. We're going to be kind of rolling them out for the next 12 months. So it's very exciting, and again, getting out to places that Druid maybe have never even been heard of, or indeed places that we might have toured to in the past.
There you go, and you have your program now. Enjoy the show.
This is currently happening in cinemas, but I guess there are a lot of ways that this kind of presentation of a live event could end up in people's eyes and ears.
Yes, obviously there's the opportunity to stream online, and obviously there's now obviously all the digital streaming platforms. And so there is potential for more events and more shows to be shown through streaming. I think there are some shows that really, really need a big screen and this big sound of a cinema. You can't beat that, essentially. I think if you're going to make a film, let's make it the best it can be.
Dione Oram there, producer of the live stream of Druid's latest production of The Cherry Orchard. And you heard also from Druid's Brian Fenton.
Next, another epistle from writer and comedian Maurice Gohan. Lately, Maurice has been spending some time in the company of Ronan Farrow, or at least in the company of his best-selling book on the life and crimes of Harvey Weinstein. In fact, she's been giving the kind of prolonged attention to Catch and Kill that few volumes in her library receive, as we'll hear now in a piece recorded before Weinstein's recent conviction.
I read a lot of books. Not a brag, but yes, I'm very smart. I'm a very quick reader, and what that means is I do a lot of skimming. Read the beginning of a paragraph, get the gist, skip to the end of the chapter. In the same way, I don't usually watch a movie, but instead just read the Wikipedia entry. I just need to get the gist. Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis is dead. Fast and Furious 7, the exact same as 1 to 6. Black Panther, not a sequel to Pink Panther. Very different franchises. Just give me the gist. I got through a lot of books last year. Half, I couldn't tell you what they were about, but it's about quantity, not quality. As they say, though, the exception proves the rule. And there is one book I read that I'll never forget. Ronan Farrow's Catch and Kill. This book was wild. Wild. Ronan Farrow is the son of Mia Farrow and Woody Allen, but everyone thinks Frank Sinatra is his real dad. He's now an investigative journalist. The book is about exposing the sexual harassment and assault in Hollywood, and it's mainly about Harvey Weinstein. For those living under a rock, and no shade if you do, because I exclusively get my news from the Daily Mail, so I miss a lot of the more serious affairs.
From porn to public servant.
Harvey Weinstein is the Hollywood producer who made Good Will Hunting and My Left Foot, who I think close to 100 women now have accused of sexual assault. He's on trial at the moment for a few of them, and he's showing up to court in a walker. I have to respect that, because he's doing the same thing we all do when we're trying to get out of trouble. I'm sick. He also did an interview recently where he was like, everyone's forgetting all the good I did for women. I had so many women producers. Which is wild. It's like Hitler saying, but the Berlin Olympics was fun, wasn't it? I wasn't all bad, guys. This book is about Ronan trying to get sources to go on record about what happened to them. He was doing the story for MSNBC and then they killed the story. Probably because half the male staff were at the same thing themselves. Weinstein hired spies to go after Ronan. Israeli spies, following him as he went to dinner with his boyfriend. Ronan is gay, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't disappointed when I read that. I imagined meeting him somehow and we would become a power couple, exposing scandals around the world and then going for drinks with Barbara Streisand to celebrate our successes. This book read like a thriller. It was such a page-turner and it was all true. I got this book in London and missed my stop on the tube because I was just so engrossed. It's so wild that you'd think it was fiction if it wasn't for the fact Ronan brought up every second sentence how this had been thoroughly fact-checked. After reading this book, I thought I was an investigative journalist. I'd talk a lot about uncovering the truth. Like I'd be drunk and gossiping, which I'm terrible for doing. Never tell me anything. I will babble to everyone. I have a very weak character. I'd be asking who cheated on who, just getting very involved in other people's business. But I felt like I had an air of legitimacy behind me. The truth always comes out, I'd snarl. I'm a purveyor of the truth. I was also suspect of every man I came into contact with. I'd buy a Coke and spar and count my change just in case. Did not trust men. Not after all the awful things they got up to in this book. But there were women in this book that covered up crimes and intimidated victims and just perpetuated the power of a really bad man. So in that way, it was quite unifying. Women and men, equal. Both can be terrible. That's a message of real hope.
Maurice Gohan there with a heartening insight. And don't forget, you can hear previous and indeed future pieces from Maurice if you search for Culture File on Spotify and then click the lozenge on which is written the awesome word follow. Okay, it's contested that any poem can be as lovely as a tree, but how about a jazz album? Carol Nelson is a composer and jazz pianist whose regular walks through her local woodlands in South County Carlow provide a time to contemplate the trees, but also to imagine how her music might speak about nature in our era of climate change and species loss. The result of the walking and thinking is Arboreal, a jazz album that begins with a feeling for some woods in Carlow, but slowly widens its scope to a broader, urgent ecological exploration. Culture File's Rachel Andrews joined Carol Nelson for a walk in the woods.
Right now we're in Clashgany Forest Loop Walk in South County Carlow. I would come for a walk here and just listen and open my ears to everything that was here. And I suppose then my question was, well, why would I do anything? Why wouldn't I just want my ears to hear this? What can I contribute as a musician, as a composer, to how, what am I going to take away from this? Beneath the surface, which was an awareness of what's under our feet here, an awareness of the mycelium, the fungal connection networks, and the, you know, what people now call the wood wide web. Trying to feel the whole of everything, the interconnectedness of everything. I was hoping to do a second album after 2017, the One Day in Winter album that I made, and as I began to think of a theme, I chose this woodland walk.
You approached the ecological artist Cathy Fitzgerald.
Yes, Cathy. I knew that she was very active as an ecologist and as an artist, and particularly in relation to the forest and her own project, the Hollywood Forest. I wanted to have a sense of positive future in relation to climate change and biodiversity loss, and the idea of the Anthropocene was something that people were talking about, and I said, how do we imagine the future beyond that? And she introduced me to an Australian philosopher called Glenn Albrecht and the idea of these neologisms. So the symbiocene was the word that I thought I might use that as a title, for example. So we began a conversation. I wanted to write the Requiem for Lost Species, which is on the album, and I was feeling it for myself. It's like, where do we find the space, the emotional space, to allow ourselves to really feel very dark stuff, you know, the shame that, you know, as human, I am responsible. My lifestyle is so part of a responsibility for all of this. And just grief and loss.
So I suppose it almost seems like there's a burst of creative work.
Yes.
That is responding to this.
I think so. I think the conversation has widened so much in for everybody in the last year. So that a year ago, conversations might be difficult. It's uncomfortable to think about. So even good friends of mine who, you know, aware people in some way, you know, many ways, most ways, would say, oh, you're being alarmist, or that people just not wanting to think about it. So I think that's changed. And I also have as a title Hope in the Dark. I was reading about active hope and about the need for activism, connection with other people. And I went on the school strike in Dublin and wanted to put their buoyancy into that particular piece of music, their energy. You know, I'm a very positive kind of a person, so it wouldn't have been okay for me to create something that was just all very, I have to use the word dark again, I can't think of another one. I would come back here where we're sitting with the pianos over there, and just with that kind of feeling of spaciousness, sit and let my hands happen and just see what they... My hands have a kind of a life of their own really now on the piano. It's not an intellectual process. It's where do they land and where do they want to go next. That's pretty much how I compose. I suppose that kind of organic approach extends to the idea that this is not, in the end, going to be a solo piano piece. It's going to be opened up for a piano trio with bass and drums. So Dominic Mullen on the drums and Cormac O'Brien on the bass. I'm aware of what they're going, the kind of thing they're going to bring into it. So I have to create a roadmap. Question myself in that I would say, Carol, what you've done really is you've just written a bunch of pretty tunes and put titles on them, really. Isn't that all it is? But I know that I did so much more than that. Perhaps that's how it emerges now. It's just something I hope people really enjoy listening to from beginning to end and hopefully make part of their lives for as long or short a time. And that's as much as anyone can ask for, really.
Carol Nelson there, out walking and talking with Rachel Andrews. Carol Nelson's album Arboreal is out now. And that brings to a close this edition of the Culture File Weekly. We'll be back with more Wisdom from the Woods next Friday at 7 here on RTE Lyric FM. Till then, bye now.